From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today, a report on two of the wars that are raging on the African continent. This was a press briefing delivered by Bintou Keita, Assistant Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations at the UN, after a recent visit to South Sudan and Ethiopia.
Thank you very much. So I just returned from South Sudan, and at the time where I went there, it was a very crowded place, which in some ways meant that it is a place of attention, and I think it rightly so. When I visited South Sudan, we had the AUPSC who was visiting for several days South Sudan. We also had the Fifth Committee visiting, and we also had the special envoy of IGAD visiting South Sudan. And in that, my main purpose and objective for the visit was to review with the mission, the new implementation of the new mandate for the mission, and at the same time look at interacting with most of the government officials, including also the opposition leaders, of the peace process. And at the time where I was going, the high-level revitalization forum was meant to take place from 26 April to 30th of April. So that was my main objective. And I also didn't just stay in Juba. I also visited Wau and Rumbek in a way to understand better the challenges on the ground, and particularly looking at protection of civilian in Wau, and also interacting with local government officials and civil society organizations all the same. In Rumbek, this was a very interesting place, not because of the usual fight that we see between armed group and the government, but mainly because this is a place where intercommunal violence is extremely high. And in that, I was told as a way to point and go there that there was one incident in December where 207 people were killed in the context of this intercommunal violence, and 105 people were injured. So I was trying to understand what we, in the context of Rumbek and the field, could do in support of people-to-people talk and type of reconciliation in the context of reducing the intercommunal violence. I met the first Vice President Thabo Mbeki in Juba. And in that meeting, what I was trying to assess was the degree of views and optimism around the high-level revitalization forum. And clearly, what I was told already at that time was the decision was to postpone the high-level revitalization forum because the divergent views and positions between the warring parties were too far apart to enable any meaningful conversation if the peace talks were moving as scheduled and planned. For that, what I can say is that we, as the United Nations, in support of the African Union, but also the sub-regional level of interaction, are fully committed to support IGAD and the High-Level Revitalization Forum. And actually, and when I was there, it was very interesting because a number of members, be it from the civil society organization or women and youth leaders and elderly, but also the diplomatic diplomatic community and the UN country team, agencies, funds and program, were quite adamant that this was the only way out in terms of implementing the peace agreement from 2015. So though there was some disappointment and frustration around the postponement of the talks to 17 now May to 21st of May, everybody is rallying behind this as the way forward. And again, while I was there, there was still fighting going on. So you all know about the cessation of hostilities that was brought forward through the IGAD-led process back in December. And the CITISAM, in the context of the work that the mission, the UNMISS is doing, is to support the CITISAM from a logistic perspective, as well as ensuring the support, which also lead to the technical type of expertise which is provided to the CITISAM. And if we were to push further, the mission is also very much engaged in two other streams that are clearly important as part of the process of trying to rally and promote a peaceful coexistence in the country, having to do with the national dialogue, where, again, the mission is providing support, but also providing support to what we call the people-to-people talk at community level. And this is completely relevant in relation to what I have explained to you with the intercommunal violence, which is also as a result of some of the difficulties of the people coming all together. Now, it's also clear that one of the elements which was brought into the mix from the government officials had to do with, if the peace talks in the high-level revitalization forum are not going through as planned and we are not able to reconcile the views, how do we then have another way to look at exiting the situation and the dire situation in which the country finds itself. And this is also one place where we had, as a United Nations, to be very clear in the Department of Peacekeeping Operation to say, if there is a plan B, this is not a genuine engagement in going through the motion of the high-level revitalization forum. So in that, the prospect from within the capital is to move to elections, and it is very clear to us that this is not at all, from an economic perspective, from a political perspective, from a humanitarian perspective, a country where it is conducive right now to go through any meaningful elections in as a plan B. So for us, there is no plan B. The only plan is the high-level revitalization forum. I also attended what we have called the high-level dialogue, leadership dialogue around conflict-related sexual violence and sexual and gender-based violence. And in that, the purpose was to use the visit to redynamize or to rekindle commitments that were made in 2014 through the leadership of the special representative of the Secretary General in conflict-related sexual violence, Mrs. Bangura, at the time, with the parties in South Sudan, which kind of went a bit dormant, though there was a high level of commitment from the Minister of Gender, Women and Child Welfare, as well as a commitment at the president's level to have a focal point dealing with the provision of the action plan to advance the issues of tackling the element of emergency and impunity and prosecution and of the perpetrators of sexual and gender-based violence and conflict-related sexual violence. So we had this leadership dialogue, which in my view was a success in the sense that not only the minister mobilized the cabinet and the focal point from the president, president, but we had the diplomatic community and the UN country team present, including a number of civil society organizations and community-based organizations who took the floor, and religious leaders who clearly, in my view, have to become much more vocal about the fact that the situation in that is absolutely not acceptable. In Addis, I also participated in what is called the Tana Forum. And the two elements that I want to leave with you is the theme of the forum was African issues for African solutions, with a view to provide a greater sense of ownership to the African countries themselves. And I think this is the right direction to go. And in that, my main goal was to look at the situation on the continent, because most of our peacekeeping operations, the largest, are on the continent. I can give you a number of data that are supporting this. But clearly, to have now the African Union and a number of personalities, including Obasanjo, who is one of the founders of the Tana Forum, talking about pushing the African member states and countries to take responsibility, I think is a right way to go. The second element which I took from Tana Forum has to do with everything related to what is happening with the lake basin Chad and the difficulties around it and the disappearance of it and the impact it has on the livelihoods of hundreds of thousands of people, and how this is has to be connected or interconnected to what we call the peace and security pillar with the development pillar, as well as some of the aspects of the human rights pillar interconnected into providing a response. And I also attended a discussion in Addis, what was called the first ever high-level dialogue between African Union and the Office of the Human Rights Commission, co-chaired by the AU chairperson and the High Commissioner of the Human Rights. And the theme was around how do we ensure that there will be a much stronger compliance framework in relation, at least from my perspective, in the context of the peace support operations in Africa. But there were much more discussions around racism and xenophobia and all kinds of things that are forthcoming in the context of the migration and the mobility of people around the continent, but also, of course, the world. And finally, I also attended the high-level, what is called the African Women Leaders Network, African Women for Africa, in the sense that there is a vision from the African Union on the Agenda 2063, which is about the Africa we want. So how do we get there? It's also having of the aspect of the women, peace and security coming into the play of the stakeholders who have to act on the issues that are confronted by the continent. And in there, I think we had very interesting discussions, but my main advocacy is that for women, peace and security agenda, what we need men, more men, to be sensitive and champion, and not thinking that because it is about women issues, then it is the women only who have to talk about the women, peace and security agenda, because for me, it's about the society, and it's about the community, and it's about the world affairs, where we need the women, peace and security to kick in really, and not just paying lip service to it.
Thanks very much. We'll open up the floor for questions. Yes.
Thank you very much, Edith Lederer from the Associated Press, and thank you on behalf of the United Nations Correspondents Association for doing this briefing. I have a couple of questions related to the issue of the Revitalization Forum. First of all, when you said that for the UN there is no plan B, it is the revitalization forum. What was the reaction from the government officials that you spoke to? Did they offer any ways to try to reduce the differences between the parties, and is your sense that they've ruled this out entirely or just postponed it?
First of all, I think the postponement comes from the IGAD. And the IGAD, because they really are trying their best, their level best, to try to reduce the gaps between the warring parties in terms of the positions. And they had a plan, which is actually ongoing, which is to have a shuttle diplomacy between Addis and South Sudan, and including at some point they will be going to Pretoria in order to engage Riek Machar. And I think it's a wise way to look at not just having a meeting for having a meeting and then ticking a box and saying we have had the meeting, but to acknowledge that actually the parties are so far apart that there is a need to have some kind of homework in order to arrive at the 17 May with the parties having reflected a bit more on the possibility to come to a common ground. This is how I would be framing it. So the government reaction, so to respond again to your questions, was when we were very clear that there is no plan B, because they told us, we can organize election between 3 and 6 months. We said, even in places where it is extremely well organized, there is no way that you can go through all the steps of preparing election in the conditions that we are seeing now. So they were a bit dubitative because they think that they can just maybe with a magic wand organize these elections. But my sense is still, when I was in Addis and I interacted with some of them, including later not in that meeting, my sense is that they are still engaging. They are still dialoguing. And I think we should encourage this. The worst which can happen is that people stop talking to each other and not engaging.
So when would you envision a possible revitalization forum meeting taking place? Are you talking about months or weeks?
So far, the shuttle diplomacy is, just to give you an idea, so when I was there, the high-level revitalization forum was planned from 26th to 30th. Right. Then it was pushed back to 2nd or 3rd of May. Then to 8th of May. And now it's 17th. And I think this, in view of the position of the parties, seems to be much more realistic. And with the engagement of the state minister of Ethiopia, foreign minister, whom also I met in Addis, and others, the councils of ministers who are engaging in this shuttle diplomacy, including the special envoy of IGAD, Mr. Weiss, I think we have better chance. And the fact that we have a number of international community members also engage the diplomatic community to all pass the same message. Please come to a place where there is a genuine engagement to continue and have a...
And one final follow-up on elections. Do you think that this remains the goal of the government quickly? That they still want elections in 3 to 6 months.
I have to say that after the exchange, my view was this is not going to happen tomorrow. So, and with the position of the international community, I believe we will have to go through the process of maybe in next iteration later. This will be maybe more conducive environment for that.
Mr. Badi?
Thank you for Thank you, Madam Assistant Secretary General, for this briefing. My name is Abadi from the paper Le Dossier. You spoke about peace and security, about diplomatic activity, about elections, about the role of IGAD, of the African Union, of the potential role of the civil society. What is the role in here for the Political Affairs Department? How much consultation have you had with the department, and to what extent you coordinated your trip with it?
Well, interestingly, one of the way to prepare any visit, first of all, I don't see a separation between department when it comes to a file, a specific file, and in this case, South Sudan. The discussions which have led to why South Sudan, I think, were a collective view of how do we support the African Union and its sub-regional organization in support to South Sudan. And in that, there is no separation DPA, DPKO. We have what we call the African Union UNOAU, based in Addis, who was our point of entry in organizing and facilitating some of the meetings that we had, of course, with the mission in Juba, but also some of the meeting with the opposition leaders and the AUPSC members, including the P5, for Addis. So I don't see separation. I see a collective endeavor in order to try to support a country-led process with support from the regional organization.
Matthew Lee, Intercity Press, on behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access. Thanks for this briefing. You mentioned WOW, and I wanted to ask you, just as a DPKO official, can you give either an actual update or why there's not yet an update in terms of the allegations of sexual exploitation against the Ghana UN police unit there? It seems to, like, I know that they keep saying that they were removed, but what has actually taken place in terms of investigating it? And a question I'd hoped to ask Fairheim, but I'll ask you. There have been a letter to Mr. Lacroix from Tamil organizations in Sri Lanka about the deployment of peacekeepers, quote-unquote peacekeepers, who were alleged to have engaged in summary executions in Sri Lanka. And there's been a second letter, May 1st, and I wanted to know, they seem to believe that they haven't gotten a response, and they've named particular commanders and said that there's... And I'm just wondering, where does it stand in terms of DPKO addressing the pretty troubling concerns raised by these groups about the lack of vetting of peacekeepers deployed by DPKO? Thanks.
Okay, so you had two questions.
WOW and the Sri Lankan.
Okay, so I went to WOW, and my main goal in WOW was to interact with the community in the POC site, in the protection of civilian site. And in there, I met with the women, and some of the questions came in terms of where we are with the investigation. And just to be very blunt with you, the OIOS investigation is still ongoing, and we are waiting for the results. The results are going to be shared with Ghana as a country, because this is part of the way the Memorandum of Understanding with the Foreign Police Unit is organized. And in the meantime, I have to say the government officials in WOW, the local government whom I met, they didn't discuss with me immediately. But what they did, which I found was very diplomatic, was they wrote a letter, and in the letter at the end, they said, okay, can you provide a status on where we are with the investigation? And the woman also asked where we are with the investigation. So I'm just telling you where we stand. The OIOS process, independent-led process, is going on. Once we have it, it's going to be shared with the country. And for the follow-up actions, which will be depending on what the facts are, we can only reiterate again once more that in the context of the mission, all the precautionary measures and education, awareness raising, training are provided on a regular basis, including banners that are displayed everywhere in the mission. And I've seen it. So it's not that I read it in a report, I've seen it. And even people carrying their no excuse card and showing me their no excuse card for sexual exploitation and abuse. And the second question, the letter that you are referring to, I know that the department is looking into what has been provided to us, and there will be a response in due time.
Yes, Mr. Bad.
Thank you. Thank you for the briefing. My name is Abdulhamid Sayam from the Arabic daily Al-Quds Al-Arabi. Last Friday, the MINURSO mandate was extended only for 6 months. This is a precedent. The U.S. Representative said this is a textbook of a frozen conflict. There are many other frozen conflicts like UNIFIL, Cyprus, Ondof and Golan Heights, and many others. So what is your vision of how to address these frozen conflicts and have the mandate reactivated in a different way? There will be achievements, there will be results, there will be consequences. They come back to the Security Council and say, we achieved this. We don't need to extend the mandate beyond this year or that year. Thank you.
So I'm trying to frame the question in such a way that I understood it. So is the question specific to MINURSO? It's
to the frozen conflicts where these peacekeeping missions stay forever.
Okay.
Like 64 in Cyprus, 78 in South Lebanon, 48 in Unmogib in Pakistan and India. All these years and these peacekeeping observation mission or missions are sitting there doing nothing. What could be done about it?
Well, if I may, I will reframe this way. The question for me to ask is, if they were not there, what would happen? Because from my understanding and the way I've been looking at it, I took this position in early November. And so I'm looking across the 15, now we are 14 because UNMIL has closed on 30th of March this year. When I'm looking across the rhetoric that it is because there is no peace process moving, then they are doing nothing, I would say that we will need to reframe this, because all the reduction of violence, skirmishes, etc., which can escalate, actually, they are dealt with by the peacekeepers, by the mission. So, in other words, for me, they have their value, and they are rendering and performing on the basis of what is going on there. Now, we also had it on the 28th of March, the open debate on partnership for peacekeeping and action for peacekeeping. And I think one of the questions that we should be asking is at the Security Council, the member states, when we say they are frozen because of what? Because of the dynamics that are going on at local, regional, sub-regional, which have to do with politics. So, and this is not the mission is a tool at one point to support a political process. So how do we get this right and not what I will call sometimes using the mission as a scapegoat? Sorry for using this term, but because it is a shared responsibility, so the performance of the mission has to be looked at with the performance of all the stakeholders.
That was Bintu Keita, Assistant Secretary General for UN Peacekeeping Operations in South Sudan and Ethiopia, speaking at the UN on Wednesday.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.